Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Sunday, March 9th, 2014. You are listening to Studio 7 coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us this Sunday evening. Live from Washington, I'm Sandra Nyaira. Among our top stories this evening, a delegation from the International Monetary Fund is expected in Harare this week to monitor Zimbabwe's implementation of its economic programs.
What could make them unhappy though is the government's plan through announcements by the president that they want to massively increase salaries to go beyond poverty bottom line.
Disabled schools are affected by the government's failure to fund the education of school children from poor backgrounds. And we give you the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo. A delegation from the International Monetary Fund is expected in Harare this week to monitor Zimbabwe's progress on the staff monitoring program, an informal arrangement between the government and the IMF to monitor the implementation of the state's economic programs. World Bank senior country economist Nadia Pifaretti says the team would be in the country for consultations on the SMP program. Zimbabwe has been working on a rearrangement program of building bridges with international institutions as it seeks to revive an ailing economy. I reached out to economic analyst Masimba Kuchera.
Well, looking at the program, I think that the IMF will be happy that the government has been able to maintain stability on the economic front, although they have not been able to grow the economy, but they have allowed it to be stable. They continue to use the multi-currency system, and they also continue to hold down payment to civil servants. What could make them unhappy, though, is the government's plan through announcements by the president that they want to massively increase salaries to go beyond poverty bottom line when the economy is not performing to satisfaction for it to be able to accommodate such increase.
Can they strike a balance between the government workers' needs and the desire to make sure that the government's wage bill does not grow that much? What can be done to bring the two together, to bridge that gap, to make sure that at least the IMF is kept happy on one hand, and at least the employees who work for the government are also kept happy?
A balance is very difficult, but we are aware through audits that we've done that government has a number of ghost workers on its payroll. So a removal of that will significantly improve the view of government in one way. Minister Chinamata has not been able to entertain the issue of retrenchment, which could also be an option that they may usually the IMF recommend. But if they manage to deal with the issue of ghost workers, especially weeding them out, it will significantly help Minister Chinamata in his quest to be able to raise finances. But what is critical is that this economy should be capitalized and this economy should grow. And leakages, especially in the mining industry, should be closed. And this is what the government should be working on, to say, how do they close leakages in the mining industry? Even Minister Chinamata is now admitting that he's getting very little, if anything, from Maran, which is a concern because mining is happening there 24 hours. There are four companies mining there in the state.
That was economic analyst Masimba Kuchera speaking with me earlier on from Harare. The government's failure to support struggling poor children under its BEAM program is now affecting disabled schools in the country that have been receiving money from the state, leaving parents worried. Taurai Shava reports from Gweru.
Single mother Elizabeth Ruyacha lives in Gweru's Mkoba 1 Identity suburb with her 12-year-old daughter, Grace, a grade 5 pupil who is deaf and dumb. Out of the desire to get a good education, Elizabeth, who is originally from Kadoma, came to live in Gweru so she could send her daughter to the Jairus Jiri School, which caters for the deaf and dumb. The unemployed mother supports her family through odd jobs. She has also been getting assistance towards Grace school fees through the Basic Education Assistance Module, or BEAM, a government-backed program which supports disadvantaged children. Local education authorities recently held a meeting with Elizabeth and other parents of children at Jairus Jiri School, informing them that they intended to put Grace and other disabled children into conventional schools. She tells Studio 7 she's unhappy about such a move, as she thinks this will be a major setback for her daughter.
Mwana kuti aendeswe pachikoro chine mwana anotaura. Wese achitaura pachikoro ipapo ari wana asingatauri.
I feel that it is difficult for a child like mine, who is deaf and dumb, to be at a school with normal children, because the teacher and the other children might call her names, and this will affect her self-esteem. The other problem is that it will be difficult to get specialist teachers in those schools. Those children who are deaf and dumb won't be in the same class. Some might be in grade 1, others in grade 2, and so forth. How would they be able to learn productively if they are going to be put in the same class with one teacher?
Although most schools that cater for the disabled in the country are run by non-governmental organizations, pupils at these schools still receive support from the government. Jairus Jiri School in Gweru's Ascot High Density Suburb has just over 200 pupils, and 85% of them rely on government support. Mdawanu School in Mkoba 11, which is run by the Zimcare Trust, caters for the mentally handicapped and has 45 children, all of whom have been receiving government support. Sources tell Studio 7 that at the recent meeting with parents, the education authorities did not clearly state why they were planning to take children with disabilities into conventional schools. Studio 7 was not able to hear from the provincial authorities' office on the issue, as they did not return calls. But a teacher at another Gweru school, which also caters for the disabled, speaking on condition of anonymity, confirmed that a similar meeting was held at the school, adding that the move to transfer disabled children into conventional schools follows government's recent announcement that it no longer has money for the BIM program. Another parent, who only identified himself as Jayaguru, also has a child who goes to Jairus Jiri School. Jayaguru told Studio 7 that although it is now the trend to integrate disabled children in schools with other children, the biggest problem is that the conventional schools are not designed for the needs of the disabled and they lack trained teachers to take care of the disabled children's needs.
I don't disagree with the interaction, but pane pokuti pakudzidza kwacho manje.
I don't disagree with the idea that disabled children should interact with their able-bodied colleagues. But when it comes to learning, how will my deaf child be able to cope in a class of normal children? How will she learn? At Jairus Jiri School, where she is currently learning, there are trained teachers who are able to teach her in sign language, so I feel it is best for my child to keep going to that school.
Jayaguru says schools for the disabled are more expensive than conventional schools and hence the need for government to keep on supporting them. A social worker who asked not to be named told Studio 7 that as they face economic hardships like most ordinary people, parents with disabled children are likely to stop sending their children to school if the government stops supporting them. Elizabeth says government needs to do all it can to ensure it continues supporting the education of the disabled children so that they don't fall behind their peers.
It would be very difficult for us to send our children to school without government support. Government should understand our plight and ensure that our disabled children enjoy the right to education like other children. Only a few parents of disabled children would be able to continue sending their children to school without government support. Most would have no choice but to keep their children at home.
Zimbabwe's education system was once the envy of the sub-region, but economic problems have seen the system crumbling. Latest statistics from the Provincial Office of the National AIDS Council show that only 15% of about 77,400 orphaned and vulnerable children in the Midlands province got school-related assistance last year. Government says it has set aside $15 million for the BIM program, but this is not enough. Many here say if the government does not address the country's economic problems soon, the most affected will be disabled children. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shava.
And now we go to the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo.
You are now listening to the Youth Forum, your forum focusing on your issues. Today, I'm gladly joined by Dixon Majaha, who is a youth recipient from the Youth Empowerment Fund and has recently started his own business. Dixon, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tatenda, for having me on the program.
Can you tell us what your business was for and how you came about to receive these monies?
Yes, I'm one of the beneficiaries of the Youth Fund, and my project is this 10 seconds, which I'm doing in Mtasa District, Ward 24. Yeah, I've been trying to do some projects for quite a long time. Since 2002, I've been applying for various projects from government and private sector. But this time around, I was fortunate enough to receive seed money of about 1,200 from KEDS Youth Fund, Kurera Fund.
Would you say that the process was simple this time around? And can you tell us what you had to do to secure these funds?
Yeah, the process was not, I cannot say it was quite simple, but it takes some time. It almost takes some 8 months for me to receive those funds. Both, if you apply for the loan, the first thing you do, you submit your proposal to the bank. Then the bank, the branch, your local branch, they could scrutinize the project proposal before they submit it to their head office. From the head office, they will take some time, about 3 to 4 months, to get a reply for you if you are successful for the first stage. Then from that, the second stage is inspection of the project. Then there will be a team which comes from the bank and from the Ministry of Youth to inspect your project. After inspection, they again brought back the report to their head office. Then from there, if they are satisfied with their inspection, they will recommend you to have some funds. Then after that, will be issued with the offer letter from the bank. Then from there, the money will be put in your account.
How did you know how to do a business proposal, as some youth have been turned away for having inadequate proposals? Did you get any help to make this process happen for you?
Yeah, firstly, as I said earlier, that I've been trying since 2002. From there, I was gaining a lot of experience. Secondly, I was working with relevant government officials who are trained to do these business project proposals and business consulting.
How has your life changed since you were given these funds and are now able to embark on your own personal business?
Yes, I'm very grateful for the project, the government project from the Ministry of Youth. But right now, I received some funds towards the end of January this year. And my project is just in its initial stages. Both I'm doing pen feeding. If you are doing pen feeding, you have to feed the cattle for about 3 months. Then you, from there, 3 to 4 months, then you can sell this beast.
That's really nice to hear. What's your message to the youth out there who also are hoping to receive some funds from the Empowerment Fund, and how can they go about doing this? What's your quick advice?
I think my first message is perseverance. I also encourage you to seek knowledge and some skills from government officials, like officers from the Ministry of Youth and some officers from Agritech. These guys are trained in dealing with project proposals, and only not the project proposals, but also to dealing with the project consultants and looking with some project which can be viable. So I encourage you to work with these officers. Another thing I want to encourage youth is to stop politicking. Some youth think that this project is meant to benefit youth from Zambia. But when I applied this project, there was no element of politics in this. I was not asking any card of a political party.
Dixon, I do want to thank you for joining me today on the Youth Forum, and I want to say good luck as you continue your business ventures in hope for prosperity as a young person in Zimbabwe.
Thank you, Tatenda. And my message to you is persevering in that direction.
You were listening to the Youth Forum, your forum focusing on your issues. Today, I was gladly joined by Dixon Majaha, who is a youth recipient from the Youth Empowerment Fund and has begun his business early this year. This is Tatenda Gumbo. Make sure you join me next time.
Through its love for Zimbabwean music, an American couple living in Anchorage, Alaska, has produced a DVD compilation of Zimbabwe's traditional mbira and marimba music called Soul Resonance, which features the late great mbira and marimba player Dumi Maraire and other artists. Douglas and Laurel Epps say they never had the opportunity to meet with Dumi and have never been to Zimbabwe, but they still have managed to come up with this documentary by interviewing different people, including 25 Zimbabweans. Doug says the focus of Soul Resonance is the experience of North Americans being introduced to this music and how the lives of Americans have changed through it. The documentary features Dumisani Maraire from the days he was a student at Ngwano Ngoma College in Harare in the 1950s and 1960s before he moved to the University of Washington in 1969, where he was taught by one of the artists featured in the DVD, Alport Mhlanga. Sadly, both Dumi and Alport are late, but they left a lasting legacy. Jonga Kandemiri speaks with both Doug and Laurel about their project.
We were in a period in our lives where we were trying to decide what to do next for a career, because we had left Alaska traveling around, and all I knew is that I wanted to find some place where I could play this music that I'd learned in Homer, Alaska. We were traveling around talking to different people in the Pacific Northwest in the United States, trying to find a place where we wanted to live, but also where there was people playing Zimbabwean-style music. And one idea that we came up with after talking to so many people was, you know, because we heard a whole bunch of different stories about how the music started here and so on, I just set out the idea to my wife, maybe we ought to make a documentary movie about how this music started in the U.S. And that idea just kept growing, so we decided to do it eventually.
To you, Laurel, have you been to Zimbabwe for you to fall in love with Zimbabwean music?
No, we have not been able to travel to Zimbabwe. We have just met many wonderful Zimbabweans here in the United States that have been fortunate enough to travel over here for our annual Zimbabwean festivals that are now happening all over the United States.
To you, Doug.
Well, I have listened to all kinds of different music, but this one affected me very deeply. And I never considered myself a musician, but I was very drawn into this music. And so our friend told me, the music affects you that much, why don't you try playing it? And so it took me a while to get up the courage to do that. So eventually I did, and I became very infatuated by the music. So I was never very interested in playing any other music but this one. So that is how I got involved in this.
Did you ever meet Dumisani Maraire?
Well, we never had the pleasure to meet him, because when I got involved in this music, it was around 2003, and has passed in, I think it was 1999, and so we never met him.
And that was Doug and his wife Laurel Epps on the phone from Anchorage in Alaska, speaking with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Nai baba vanhamo, ko zvamunoti mukatambira mari hamuye kumba, munofunga kuti ndinojego pamba pano nevana.
Manhamo shua, kusauya kumba overtime, sorry mukadzi wangu.
Iye zvino zvatonyanya, ini ndichaenda hangu kuvabereki vangu.
Oh, dzisisa manhamo mukadzi wangu, please.
Just a little music there from John Chibadura, Sarah Ugarike, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. This is all that we had for you tonight. From Sandra Nyaira in Washington, I wish you a pleasant evening, a very good night, and a blessed week ahead. Now stand by for Studio 7 in the Bele with Sitandekile Mhlanga. Good night, Zimbabwe. Nami ngithathe leli thuba lokubonga uSandra Nyaira, siyalamukela ku Studio 7.